We'll get started. My name is Andrew South. Randy South is my father. He's here. He's the boss. And he and his brother David, that's who I report to. We are covering Road to a Dome today, which is essentially, I've done this for a couple of years now, this topic. We cover mostly question and answer. I find people that come here have got a bunch of questions already in their mind about domes, things that they want answered, so we're going to cover that. We'll also go through kind of the basic steps, including the steps for contracting in general, just the major milestones, and then we'll cover specifically what you're going to see happen when we do the dome construction. Any questions before we get going? Is there anything that you want to make sure we get covered in here in the next 45 minutes?
Yeah.
The two of you?
I brought a list.
You brought a list. Good.
Oh, you want me to?
Yep.
You now?
Yep. Just so I make sure.
I would like to build one in the city limits of San Antonio.
Okay.
And I'd like to know what you think are the steps to get a building permit.
Okay. Great. Cover most of those.
I'd like for you to touch a little bit on school, some of the school plans that you.
Okay. We probably won't do schools a whole lot in here. The next presentation, we'll do a lot about schools, but. Let's make sure that we get you answered, no matter what, by the end of the day. We haven't got it covered. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to know, do you have a list of recommended contractors?
Recommended contractors, Kate. Good question.
Mm-hmm. I want to know about passive solar applications
Passive solar,
that one in Alberta, Canada. And also the cost comparison and energy efficiency and disaster proofing of multiple dome interconnected compared to just a single dome.
Okay.
Those are the
things. Okay, great.
That are hit.
Make sure we get that last one because that probably won't be in the normal scope. Kurt?
I'd like to know, in order to make the foundation, which would be important, you have to get an engineer to test the soil to know how much rebar you need and how deep you need to go and how, what process do you use to get the dome set off properly on the foundation.
Great, we'll go over that. Anything else? All right, well, we'll get started. Most of the domes that get constructed, we're going to focus mainly on residential here, but most of the domes that get constructed are built in, are not built in the city. They're built in the county. And most counties throughout the country have a little bit more, a little less restriction and regulations than a lot of the cities that we work with. We're licensed in many of the states to build. We can get licensed in all of the states. I mean, anybody can get licensed and do construction. The process that gets started, essentially, for you as a homeowner, a potential homeowner, is to spend an adequate amount of time in the design end. This is one area that repeatedly falls short, and it's because mostly it's just lack of experience. An owner who has in their mind's eye exactly what they're trying to accomplish for this dream home or for their home or an investment home or whatever, really needs to spend adequate time in planning. It's so fun to get out there and start hauling the dirt away and start pouring your concrete because now things are actually moving. We're actually gonna get somewhere, we're gonna get something done. But every minute that you spend on the design end, and we have a couple designers in here, Eric and Mike, and they'll tell you that the time that you spend on the design end to get exactly what you're talking about, to get represented on paper what's actually going to happen in the field is going to pay great dividends. If you go in with the attitude, well, we'll just change this and change that, that might be true in some cases, but there's so many things that impact it. Let me just give you an example. We built a dome, and the design was all laid out, very simple design. They had a stove right in the middle of this living room area, and they decided midway that they're going to change that stove. Now, let me stop for just a second. Changes are going to happen, and everybody should be flexible to that, but you should take great care in making sure you've got exactly what you're looking for so you minimize the changes. This one was something that could have been caught. The stove got changed several feet over, which now left a very decorative 12-inch hole right in the middle of her living room. And that was, you know, is it a big deal? No. Can it be patched? Is it, can we make it safe and watertight and all that you can? But that 12-inch hole now, it's in this right through the middle of our living room could have been avoided, and could have saved some money, could have saved a whole lot of heartache. So that's one little example with a home. So adequate time in your design end is going to be critical. There are national building codes that the designers are going to pay attention to. There are sometimes county and state building codes that are going to be an issue. So those will all be treated in that design end. And the dome doesn't always fit the conventional mold that's set out in the International Residential Building Code. And because of that, your design could take a little bit longer getting everything massaged so that it fits our square hole and our round peg to fit. Because that's essentially what we're doing when we get that through the process. So you've got your design end, you spend adequate time in planning on that end. Simultaneously to that, you need to be looking for land. If you haven't already got it picked out, you need to be looking for land and look for are there restrictive covenants, codes, covenants, restrictions that are going to play a part in your home site choice. For a city, there are often, there's often another layer of regulations and restrictions, and so you need to just find out, are there any city-specific regulations for your home there in San Antonio? So while you're doing your design and you're looking at your land, you find out, this is exactly what I want, now you have to go on the hunt and try to find a piece of land to put it on, because in some cases it won't fit, for whatever the restrictions or the codes are, it just won't fit. So you're working on your design, simultaneously you're hunting for your land, and this should be, building a dome or building anything should be an enjoyable process. So part of that's going to be an attitude, your attitude, but just know that design and the planning and all of that is going to pay off for you, and enjoy that portion of it. Enjoy going through. It's going to be tedious sometimes, tweaking this and tweaking that. Make sure you enjoy that portion of it, because this is everything that we put on paper is what ultimately is going to get, what you're going to get. Yes, ma'am.
Do these buildings usually do better on just flat pieces of land, or can you, if your land happens to be have some hilly areas, or does it need to be flat?
Great question. An engineer will tell you anything can be built if you have enough money. And the truth is, with the dome is a lot more forgiving to land choices than a conventional home. You will, if let's say you're going into the side of a hill. My house is into the side of a hill. We excavated a portion, built the dome, and then buried it over the backside. The dome is a lot more forgiving to those kind of constraints. You're going to have additional costs in excavation doing that kind of a setup. But the truth is, because of the just inherent strength of the dome, soil conditions, soil types, grades, a lot of those things are, the dome just absorbs the differences there. There still needs to be planning and design done to make sure it's done properly. Drainage and structures need to be sound, but that's a good question. So, no, Eric?
I was going to say, domes actually seem aesthetically more suited for hilly ground than flat ground. Because they're round, and then if you've got a lot of mountains and hills around them, they look just fine, whereas they stand out on a flat area. Especially next to a square building.
So you're going to have a lot of things simultaneously going on. You got your design, you're looking for your land, you need to be analyzing your financial situation. Domes are harder to get financing for, period. They're just harder. It shouldn't be that way. They're a better building. They last longer, they're safer, they're more efficient, but they're different to most banks. And a banker who isn't involved in construction, he wants to see, it's all about numbers. What's it going to cost? What happens if you default? How am I going to sell this? And what can I sell it for? That's all he's concerned about, whether it's round or square or whatever, it really doesn't matter, except for it impacts those few little variables that he's focused on. So your financial situation, you need to be looking at bankers and explain what's going on so that you don't get all the way down the path and then find out that there's no way to finance it. Connie Giffen does a lot of dome financing. She speaks later today. She'll be a good resource if you're interested in that portion of it. But So that's something to watch.
I guess don't, I mean, bankers don't care about utility bills and things like that.
Ridiculous, but no, they don't. No, they don't. Whether it's going to be there after the next hurricane comes or not, they don't care. They have a pretty narrow set of variables that they're looking for, and it has to fit those. Yep.
With your home being your firm, I've been reading your site for a couple of years now, so.
Oh, good.
I saw an article I think your father wrote saying that for energy efficiency, you don't really need an earth firm. But do you notice benefits?
That's a really interesting question.
What was the question?
In an earth-burned dome versus just a dome sitting out on the prairie or whatever, do you see a difference in the benefits? The answer is mostly no, you don't. We did it mainly as an aesthetic situation to get it to fit in large measure. The domes are so efficient. That's one of the reasons people went with passive solar and rammed earth homes and things, is because this absorbs in that ground heat. The one thing that I do see with my home is I have an uninsulated garage, not an uninsulated, an unheated garage. And in the middle of the winter, let's say January, is about 10 degrees. The average temperature inside the garage was 45 degrees. And it'll get up to 65 degrees in the summer. So that, it narrows the range of temperature differential just because of the earth.
And it's about 30% earth firm?
No, it's probably about 60%.
60. Oh. Yeah, about 60. Now, with the drainage you have to do ahead of time, French drains, whatever you want to do. If that's done right the first time, is that going to last 50 years?
Yes.
Or? So it's not going to have to be redone?
Nope.
Okay.
No. In fact, I expect that to be a lot longer in our house.
In county, you say most of domes are done. So they really did city sewage through there? Or what type of sewage?
Okay. Great question. Let's go back to our timeline. We're working on design. We're selecting land. And that'll be one of the questions that you look at the land. My land is located off the beaten trail a little bit. There is water or sewer or power to the general area, but what does it take to get out to my home? Or in this area of the country, and the thing to do is talk to the neighbors. Talk to your prospective neighbors and find out, what do we do in this area? Are we putting in wells and septic systems? Or are we able to connect? Is the run from my property a mile away to the road where I have to tie in, and what's the cost to tie into that? So there's a lot of questions, and the key to doing this home or any kind of home is to be a little bit of a detective, in that you find out all the answers up front, because you just can't afford to get hit something, get blindsided by something. So you need to ask questions, and your best resource is going to be your neighbors, especially if you have a farmer or someone who lives around, if you're out in the country, because he knows the soil, he knows the weather conditions, he knows exactly what's going to happen.
The maintenance cost between a conventional home and a dome, monolithic dome, can you talk to that?
Let's get to that one at the end. So we got our design, we're working on our financing, we're looking for our land. As you get the first sets of plans back, you want to be talking to your local building officials. Go in and let them know, here's a preliminary of what we're trying to build. Just want to let you know, you want to start that dialogue up front. In a few instances across the country, we've found some building officials, whether they're representing the area or it's their own mindset, will give you a fair amount of resistance. It's ridiculous, but they say, no, this can't be built for these reasons or whatever. So if there's anything weird like that, you want to know that ahead of time. And just making them aware of what's going on. And they'll be able to also help you. They'll be a great resource if there are other conditions or restrictions or anything else that's out there. They'll be able to help you find those. So just make them aware of what's going on and find out what the actual building permit process is going to be. Whether you're going to build it yourself, meaning contract and manage it yourself, or whether you're going to hire a general contractor, an informed owner is going to be money ahead versus just, hey, I'll pay a contractor and let him worry about it. You want to know exactly what's going on for no other reason, so you can kind of watch and feel how the process is going.
Do you run up against many neighborhood covenants?
Not very often. No, not very often.
Run up against what?
Good question. Do you run against any neighborhood covenants where all the owners say, no, you can't build a dome in our area?
Well, there are. The neighborhood I live in, each neighbor has to agree if you're going to do something, even as simple as building a garage. So there are neighborhoods,
yep,
cities that,
yep,
require.
We built a home for a wonderful lady a couple of years ago. Her name is Lori Hunsaker. And she lives in this little cookie cutter style subdivision. Every house is 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms. It's so wide, it's so neat, and they're scattered all over this area. And when she wanted to build her dome, which does not fit in the area, they said, well, as long as you talk to your neighbors. And she went to her neighbors and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. And they said, sounds great, it's your property, do what you want. And so in the middle of all these little cookie cutter houses is this wonderful 32-foot dome for Lori Hunsaker. She's a newspaper editor, and it's fantastic. On the other hand, Eric was just telling me about someone that we worked together with a couple years ago. He lives in a very remote area, great place for a dome. And as soon as the word got out that he was building his dome, his neighbors ganged up on him and pounded the issue away. They weren't going to allow a dome. I don't exactly know if it was legal or not when that kind of thing happens. And there are some legal questions. It's just a matter of how hard you want to push. They're going to be your neighbors for a long time. And if they don't want you building a dome, then you may not even be the neighbors that you want. So, something to consider. Kirk.
Andrew, you're an expert at spraying concrete and foam ball. If you came out on a job or got someone else that knew how to do it,
mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm,
that can be a very important phase of dome building, that's for sure.
Yep.
How long would it take you to teach a contractor? Could you do it in 3 days? Teaching someone that worked concrete but had never used a shotcrete gun or anything, how long would it take him so he could get it smooth all the way around, get the foam smooth all the way around? Would it take a couple of weeks training him, or could you do it in 3 days and then go home so he could finish it?
You could train somebody to work with a shotcrete crew and be fairly confident in a matter of a few days. To teach him to be the lead man, to do it from then and then on, how long would it take?
Well, it's kind of a tricky question. Yeah. How smart is your guy?
Yeah, that's right. His abilities and his experience. Not working concrete, some people can catch on fast, some can't. That's what
I
mean.
I went in for the first time.
Some people pick up on it really quite fast. Other people, they better do something else in life. So that's kind of a hard question.
But unless you had someone, an expert, come down to do it, it'd be pretty tough to make it look nice yourself, right? Inside, you'd have lumps on your walls. Outside, well, the outside look okay because you got the skin there, but the inside's important too. So you say just forget it?
No.
Someone can't be trained to do it, or what?
No, because they trained me. It took a long time. The spraying of the foam, and I don't take the time, the spraying of the foam is very critical.
That's the hardest thing to do.
And the reason is because the air form is not forgiving for foam. If I'm a foam contractor and I go spray the inside of a metal building, and I have trouble with my equipment and spray some garbage on the wall, I can always cover it up. And you'd never know. But on an air form, you spray the foam on, and you spray and have problems with your equipment, you spray material wrong, and you walk out the door and look on it from the outside, you'll see it forever. So I think spraying foam is perhaps more critical on a dome than any other structure. So it's a good idea to have somebody who knows how to spray foam on a dome, at least to be there for the first one to kind of coach the local guy out. If the guy is, if he sprays foam as his business, and you're there to just kind of coach him, to show him the tricks on the first dome, a few hours. And then, because he already knows how to spray foam. To teach somebody how to spray foam, that is a really good question. That's the trickiest part of construction that I know of, spraying foam. It takes a year for a guy to learn how to really spray foam. Something I do not recommend for people. just launch into the phone business unless they're really crazy about the phone. Hire somebody to do that. You're not going to save a lot of money to learn how to spray foam if you're going to build a few domes.
Now, you have a class that goes for a week, teaches you that, how to spray foam.
And after that week, you can learn how to turn the machine on and off. It takes a lot of experience.
But given that scenario, if you was going to do one, if you bring in a crew just to form it up and get it shaped, then can any contractor come in and finish it out? You know, because when you blow it up, it's already the guy you pick. Am I correct? You know, like,
good question. Andrew can answer that.
Okay.
Let me answer that in our little timeline, but first let me go one more step on Kurt's. Okay. In both the foam and the concrete, there's the application process, the actual spraying it, but there's also the technical side. And the foam is the hardest on the technical side because you have the chemical and you have the equipment and you have every variable under the sun that could happen. And because foaming on a semi-rigid membrane is so tough, you've got to have everything perfect on both sides, not just your applicator, but everything on the equipment side, the technical side. That's when he says it takes a year for a guy to learn how. That's not only spraying it, but also knowing how the machine operates and what problems could happen. Every job, there will be some problem with the foam. Every job. Randy just got back from foaming a 190-foot dome down in Alabama. In fact, he came there yesterday. He just finished yesterday. And they've been foaming on that one for a week. And we had a couple problems on that job. Because we had people who knew what they were doing on site, we were able to move right down through it. But they're the kind of problems that will shut you down and you'll lose money. So it's, and the shotcrete's the same way. There's the actual application, but there's the technical side.
Your pump breaks on you all the time. You gotta know what's wrong, how to fix it, how to keep going.
Or the concrete company brings concrete in and dumps it in the pump and you hit the button and it won't pump. Yeah. Why won't it pump? Well, shotcreting, especially our kind of shotcreting, is very peculiar, and everything that's inside the concrete mix itself has a role, and you got to understand the science behind that to make sure that it's going to get out, get on the wall, and encase the rebar properly so you have a good strong dome.
If I decide that I want a monolithic home, mm-hmm. and I can find a contractor in my area that knows Jack, you know, about foam.
Yep.
If I, this monolithic domes, do they have contractors that go different places to do this?
You bet. And let me visit that question with your question, ma'am, in just a second.
Let me ask a question that dovetails into that, too. I am about an hour and a half from Birmingham.
Oh, okay.
Down in Jacksonville.
Great.
And I want to do this, plus I want to look at building rental housing.
Excellent.
Will I be able to tap into those contractors that know what they're talking about?
You bet. Okay. You bet. Okay, back to our timeline. You're now at the point where you're getting your final design. You spent a lot of time, you feel really good about it. You got a great designer, you know what you're talking about. You're ready to go into your get your building permit because you've already talked with the building department and they know what you're doing. You know what the process is. You know whether it's a 2-week process or a 1-year process. And some municipalities, domes or other structures are a 1-year process. So you need to know that going in. You know what the process is. Know that you got your funding secured, you got the land, everything's ready to go. Somewhere towards the tail end of that, you'll be talking to these contractors. On the Monolithic Dome website, there are some contractor listings for the dome. There's a couple ways to go about it. An owner will generally contract the whole project themselves, or they'll hire someone to do it. Now, there's some hybrids in there where they do some of it themselves, or they hire someone to do part of it, or they hire a construction manager to coach them. We've done a number of houses now with a consulting group called You Build It, where the owners actually work with this consulting group, so they're actually calling the shots, but they've got this seasoned contractor in their back pocket to kind of coach them and let them know what they're doing. That's a great option if you're interested in doing the management of the project yourself. You need to start talking then to contractors. You need to decide, am I going to contract this myself, or am I going to have someone else just take care of it? I'm very well informed now. I know what the building permit requirements are. I know what's involved in the plans. I know the site. That's a very well and very wise owner. Now you make your decision, am I going to have someone else do this or am I going to do it? If you're going to hire someone to do it, then immediately start talking to them and local general contractor and in any contractor, just check the references. You want to get a good character reference and you want to look at a good quality insurance from past projects. Look at what they're doing. You're about to lay out a substantial amount of money on what you've always wanted. Take a little bit of time to do some homework on who's going to build it because you'll feel better about it. Saving in the long run. Again, you're getting to that point where you're about ready to start digging, and it's getting pretty exciting. Just pace yourself. I mean, discipline yourself. Make sure that you cross all these. I'm only saying this because we see so many owners launch right into it, and they're good people. A lot of faith, a lot of trust that everyone's going to treat them fairly, and they dive into it without knowing exactly what's going on, and they get frustrated because something hits them from the side that they don't know about. Okay, now going back to your contractor selection, how can you tap it? Your general contractor is going to need someone to build the dome. Unless you're doing it on your own, then you may want to look at having someone come in and help you do the concrete or come in to do the foam or something.
See, that's my concern is getting it blown up, foamed, and concrete, because I can do everything else. So
80%, no, probably 90% of our residential construction work is us doing the structural portion of the home. Anything that we call dome technical will take care of that. Ma'am?
Do you do the plumbing and all that that's...
Let me define it a little more.
Okay.
A lot of times you'll have a general contractor who's going to manage everything or you're going to do that. The few things that have to happen before you're ready to build your dome are you're going to need to have power on site and you're going to want to get it where your permanent power is going to be. Rather than paying to set up a temporary power, then paying again to move it and set up your permanent power, think through that process again and plan it out in your mind so that you're setting up power one time, you only pay one fee, and that's your temporary or construction power and also your permanent power. So you'll have your power set up, however you're going to do your water, you've got to have water on the site, and that's for the dome and every other aspect of the job, so get your power and your water set up front. And again, if possible, in the permanent location. And then you'll get a rough grade. You'll want to kind of have a feel. If you have a really hilly and a lot of slopes on your land or whatever, you want to kind of a vision, or and it should be drawn up in the plan, how that's going to end. What's the rough grade or the final grade going to be? Then you can come out and kind of sculpt that from the very beginning, including the level area where you're going to build your home. So once you have your power and your water and your rough grade, you're ready to go.
You need sewage.
You're right. You need to have your sewage. You need to know where that is. That doesn't impact the cost or the construction time if you do it right up front or if you do it after. You will need to know it when you're doing your footings. Now, if we were going to build it for you, we would come in at that point then, and we would meet with your plumber and your electrician, and whoever you hire, they need to have a fair amount of coordination going on at the very beginning. Let's make sure that we know everything that's going to tie in. Water, sewer, power, telecommunications, so that gets incorporated underneath where the green concrete footing is going to be. That gets excavated, that gets poured, the dome gets attached and it gets inflated. You'll have an electrician, either you or your contractor will have an electrician selected who's going to lay out all of your interior electrical. He'll come in for a couple days with the dome crew. He'll put in the conduits that are going to be inside the shell itself, or ceiling fans, or any kind of outlets. Or
that hooks onto the rebar, right?
Correct. Hooks right onto the rebar. So he's the only contractor that really interfaces during the construction of the shell, outside of normal coordination. Then your owner, your contractor, will help lay out your doors and windows. And this goes back to your question about the windows and the box. There is no specific window that you need to use. In some counties, some municipalities, they'll require certain standards. For example, when we were building in Miami-Dade, they have some very strict requirements for windows. So you find a window that fits. And that manufacturer of your window and door, for any of your exterior windows and doors, will provide a rough buck or rough out specification sheet. And the bucks, or the places for those windows and doors, will be built to those specs. Again, that's the dome technical part. What we're trying to do is we're trying to merge this round dome structure into this square window. And so that takes a little bit of coordination, and you'll want that to be taken care of by your dome contractor.
So is that done into the form?
Sometimes it's done right into the form, like from the very beginning, from the design end. The airform has an augmentation or some kind of a connection to it. Sometimes it's built inwards, and sometimes it's a kind of a mixture of both. But what you want is at the very end, the dome shell standing, structurally sound, and all of the windows and doors in the right places, so all the contractor, your conventional framing contractor, has to do is slide them in and then trim it, and he's done. And that's what he's used to. So that's what you're trying to do.
This might be a silly question, but is there a limit to the number of windows and doors that you can have in a dome? Say like a typical two-bedroom dome house. Is there a limit to the number of windows and doors you should have to maintain the energy efficiency?
Yes and no.
Okay.
There's the structural aspect. A lot of people ask that question with regards to structural. There's no limit on the structural end. It'll be designed to whatever you want it to be. On the efficiency side, the dome shell, the relationship between the concrete and the polyurethane, and all of that polyurethane on the surface is what's giving you your efficiency. If you take a dome and cut it right down the middle, cut it in half and put all glass right there, now you've lost almost 100% of your efficiency of the dome. It'd be just as if you built a square house and put all glass on one side. Just because there's so much surface area, yeah, you've got this super efficient home, but it doesn't matter because all the heat's running in and out of your front windows. So is there? Yeah, there is, and that's a balancing act. The most efficient dome is a pure dome with no windows or doors. That's the most efficient. So you have to complement that with, well, what am I actually looking for? Do I want big, grand, sweeping views on top of a hilltop? Well, it's probably worth it. So put the windows in there. Do a good job selecting high-efficiency windows, and you'll still maintain the lion's share of the efficiency.
Well, I mean, I know when you get them built, they're going to be pitch black. You know?
Yeah.
You know, if you crawl under, they'd be
black.
So it would depend on how much light. Am I doing this right? How much light that needs to be in the dome for somebody to be comfortable living. You know, there's
right.
A lot of people like their homes to be a little bright. Sometimes,
sure.
Yeah, like you might like your bedroom dark. But there needs to be, how much on the side?
Well, there are some minimums. Mike,
well,
you know
maybe
what
that's
that
why
is.
A minimum.
What's the
minimum lighting and minimum egress requirements for residents, so you have to keep that in consideration.
And that's usually a certain percentage of the square footage.
Well, that's what I was getting at,
And so you'll have to be at that point at least.
Okay.
Thanks.
But when you're doing dome, is that part of your contract design for the individual person?
Great question. At the very beginning, most of the time, you're contracting directly with the designer to design that dome. And they will know that stuff. They'll know the codes. And they should be working with you to come up with, now this is going to be a lot of light, or this is only a few windows, is that what you want? And it's hard because they're used to looking at flat paper and seeing in their mind's eye what it's going to turn out to. It's a little tougher for you to do that.
If that designer and the contractor wanted the same, or you get someone else, like an engineer to go up and design the floor plans and all that, and then you take it to the contractor, or they're one of the same.
Okay, great question. For residential, almost always the owner works with a design firm of some sort to design it, and it's separate from the contractor. A wise designer will be talking with the contractors to see if there's any kind of value engineering items that can be added into the design, things that will save them money and still accomplish the same intent. But the designer will be working with the owner. That's their responsibility. They're very good at picturing what you're trying to build, what you're telling them that you want to have built, and then actually drawing that out.
And do that designer work with the engineer for that city or county?
Yes.
To make sure that they meet the code requirements.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
Three people now, the person that meets the building codes with the designer with the contractor.
Right, and generally the designer will take care of the engineering portion themselves, or the contractor will. Depends on, and that's kind of depends on the county or the area. If you don't need structural engineering for the dome, wet stamped and sealed by a certified engineer, then I wouldn't do it for a dome.
There's three people you're paying now, the designer, the contractor,
and the engineer.
The engineer.
But usually the engineer is part of the design or part of the contract.
It is free, long as they let you go with code. You should have to pay them.
Well, the outside of your permit.
Yeah,
it's
like code, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
you're right, you're right.
What kind of luck have you had with the skylights on those ship's prisms as far as putting them in? Is that something you do after? And so I've installed a lot of skylights, but how do you do that so that they don't leak on these domes?
I hate skylights. We have gone and done repairs on numbers of skylights. Is it because the dome work was shoddy? Is it because the skylight was shoddy? Neither. You've got a dome that acts and moves and functions one way, concrete and foam, and then you've got an acrylic or metal or glass skylight that moves and functions and acts a different way. Your skylight will leak, period. At some point, your skylights will leak. Ship prisms are a little bit different because there's so much mass, they're more like the dome. Yeah, and that's not a big deal. But normally this guy. So one thing to consider when you're looking at skylights is, are you trying to get the architectural effect, or are you trying to get natural lighting to your home?
Because I noticed some of the pictures of the domes that you showed have the skylights in them.
A lot of them do. And it's a trade-off. It's a beautiful element. It does a great thing. You just need to know that what you're dealing with long-term is a maintenance issue. You can accomplish the same effect sometimes through another route. Let's say you want, and your designer will help you with this. Let's say you want to have the look of this cupola or this glass skylight or something up on top. Well, then put it up there. But don't put a hole in your dome. Just put it up there as strictly an exterior element. And then put on the inside an inverted acrylic dome where you put lots of different light fixtures or whatever to give you the same effect as the natural light, but you can now turn it on and off, and you'd never have a leak. So you're getting the architectural effect from the outside, you're getting the effect of the light on the inside,
so it's fake.
But it's fake, yep. And you're going to save yourself a lot of hassle in the long run. Most people, interesting enough too, you'll see with skylights, end up covering them up. And I say most people, a lot of people do, because they let in so much light. Eric?
I've noticed that when skylights are directly on the top of the dome, rainwater tends to run away on all directions, and it's not as much problem as if the skylight is on the side of the dome. And like he was saying, the concrete will expand and contract one way, and the window will do another way, and no matter what you do, there's a seam there, and you can caulk it. It might be fine for a few years, and then you have to keep recaulking it. The best way to keep water from leaking is what you do with that leading edge of the skylight. For example, like shingles work on a house. You know, rain's not going to go up, so you have to have something to protect the lip of the skylight and shed that water off.
So a lot of the new skylights come with design crickets.
Yep. And we're getting a lot better, and we know which manufacturers make one that fits the domes better. I mean, we're learning more and more just from past experience what's going to work the best. Yes, ma'am?
This is kind of off the lines, but why have this flooring like a pool? If you had an indoor pool inside of a dome, how does the fabric of the dome react to the flooring and is it still going
to... No problem. The fabric, number one, the fabric's on the outside of the dome.
Well, I mean the inside of the dome. What's on the the foam? How does the foam...
Well, the concrete's the very inside, which is very, very robust against the effects of chlorine or...
It's not going to turn green?
No. You'll want to use... you will have higher humidity, so you may consider using a marine paint on the inside of that, which is designed to kind of combat some of that. But
if you were building a senior citizen center with a pool inside...
Sure.
It wouldn't be a problem.
No, you'll have more problems... Correct me if I'm wrong, Mike. You'll probably have more problems with air transfer, air quality, than you will...
Well,
that's
not. What do you do about that?
Oh, there's plenty of mechanical equipment that takes care of that.
Did you have a question, Mandel?
Yeah, I did. A friend of mine on just a regular house, she's in Tornado Alley, she has these shields that come over her windows and her doors. Can you put those on and would they be worth it?
Yeah, absolutely you can. In fact, David's house, if you're going down to the center tomorrow, you can see that on his house. He's got it as an example there.
She has a remote from inside and she just brings the shields down.
Sure. Yep, absolutely.
Also the floor, she has a heated floor. Is that a very good type of thing to have?
Yeah, absolutely. Heated floors, radiant heat flooring is kind of a premium, and people with a lot of money put it in their homes. With the dome, because of its efficiency again, and because of the inherent nature of the connected concrete throughout, you can do it very affordably. The most cost-efficient way to put heat in a dome is forced air. But radiant heat is not very much more. Unlike conventional homes where you've got forced air here, you double or triple the cost and you put radiant heat in.
Is it better for radiant heat or forced air? If you want to pay a little extra. Here in Texas in the summer, it's very, very warm, of course. I don't know how you would air condition or if you have
to. You'd have to do forced air conditioning, yeah, pretty much. But for heat, if you're in a cold climate, I'd strongly recommend you consider radiant heat because you can cut your mechanical costs in half when you're actually putting it inside. And then the amount of heat needed to heat the dome is pretty minimal. It's a great way to go. I have it in my house.
Are people running into that heating, that high velocity AC with these domes?
I'm not familiar with it. I guess I haven't
seen it. It's little silver tubes about like so.
I haven't seen it.
It's you need to know about it.
Okay.
Because they're using it for retroing old houses. Because you can just snake this tube up, pop it out, come down to your basement, and you've got it. It would seem to me like it'd be perfect.
You probably could.
Are you able to have a fireplace of some type?
You bet, sure. One thing with the dome, whether it's radiant heat, forced air, fireplace, whatever, you need to consider air quality. Because with the radiant heat, you're not bringing in fresh air to heat the air. So you need to consider air quality. You need to have an air-to-air exchanger that'll bring in fresh air. And the same with the fireplace. The fireplace is going to make it really dry inside. And that's going to be, it's a radiant source of heat also. You're going to want some air exchange in there. You have a question?
When it comes to like your radiant heat, do you need additional heat source? Would that be enough to heat up?
Radiant heat?
Yes.
Oh, that's enough?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We live in Idaho, and the house we built for my parents, they have radiant heat, and that's all they use. And then we have a separate heat source, which is propane, on a small propane fireplace. Should anything happen to the radiant heat, then we can turn on the propane. So it have a redundancy. Yes, ma'am.
Real quick, can you give an overview of the maintenance versus a dome versus a convention home? I'm in the rental business for the convention homes, and I look at
great.
Every time a tornado comes, you got the roof replacing, and you got all this stuff. So quick overview with the maintenance versus the rentals of the dome versus conventional home.
Okay. With that, let me just answer. You had a question about interconnected versus separate. As far as maintenance and structure and stability, there's no difference.
What about cost?
Cost, there will be a little bit of a difference, but most of that gets, you add more interior elements with just one single dome. And you add less interior elements with multiple domes because the domes themselves make up a lot of the space. So the cost is pretty much a wash. One dome will be less money than multiple domes, but it'll be pretty close. Okay.
And with that question, compare that with insurance. Because you know, every time you get a roof of a house, and the insurance goes sky high, even though the insurance is in place. But with conventional homes, every time you get disaster. There's an insurance issue too.
The insurance thing, unfortunately, isn't as great as we'd like it to be. It is better because you've got a masonry home, a concrete home, versus a wooden home or whatever type of home that you have. And so there is a benefit there. And we're pushing right now with some insurance companies to give even better rates for homes because they're so much superior. As far as the maintenance, you're looking at maintenance on the dome with any structure. There's two things that are really the enemy as far as maintenance. One is the UV, and then just the rest of the weather, whether it be temperature swings or whether it be rain and hail and tornadoes or whatever. The dome structurally will not be damaged by any of that. What you're really combating with the dome is protection of the dome exterior skin, and that's your maintenance. That's most of your maintenance. And so the selection of the long-term coating that you put on the outside of your dome is can treat that. We've been working with, I mean, you can go out there and paint a dome whenever you want to protect it, and that'll last so long. And then in 10 years, you go out there and paint it again, and that'll protect it from the UV. the dome itself is strong enough to withstand most of the weather, so that's what you're really treating is the UV. You can put other kinds like concrete or ceramic tile on the outside, metal cladding. There's a lot of different systems that you can have, and you just need to weigh out what's the lifespan of the coating versus my area for UV index or whatever. Because that's really
Does
the
that
one.
Have to be done when the house is built?
No, ma'am. No, that's the long term. That's the long term. The air
so you build one of these, and then how long are you looking at before you got to do something?
For homes, you're probably 15 years before it has to be done. And people usually are between 5 and 15 years before they do something. Yes, sir.
Skin that y'all use.
Yes, sir.
How long have you been using the same type of skin? The skin that you use now, how long have you been using that same skin?
He's pointing at me because I'm old.
Yeah.
That's it.
We have domes out there that are 25 years old that owners have not done a thing.
But is it with the same standard scheme?
Yeah, pretty much. The chemistry hasn't changed. But
okay.
If anything, it's gotten a little better.
So are you hinting that the maintenance on a dome is a lot less than a conventional house?
Once you have your permanent coating on, and again, it depends on what coating you choose. If you choose just to paint it, then it's just like your regular house. You'll paint your house. You'll replace your roof shingles in 15 or 30 years or whatever. But if you choose the proper roof coating, and it is, you'll pay two or three or four times as much as just painting it. But you'll have a 50-year coating now, and the dome will not move. We have a neighbor who put metal cladding on the outside of his dome, and it looks just like we did it 25 years ago. So.
But now hail's like if you had a golf ball size hail or just a baseball size hail, which we do, it's not gonna break off the surface of it or anything.
There was one case, and I can't remember very well. Do you know the one in, it wasn't Texoma, was it?
We built a school in Oklahoma. They had hailstones were so big, they were lethal.
Well, we know those.
They came to the school, we expanded the school with the domes. They had some metal buildings as the school. And those hailstones would literally go right through the metal and into the classrooms. They would actually kill some cows in the neighboring pasture. And it didn't have any effect on the dome.
It didn't chip or anything?
No.
Nothing whatsoever.
Wow. Didn't puncture the skin.
Didn't puncture the skin.
That's fantastic.
But if it punctures the skin, don't you just come in there and heat patch the skin? Is that what you do?
Sure.
Yes.
Yep. The skin very seldom, because it's, and it depends on where it's, if you're in a high traffic area and it's right there and it's a school and kids are poking at it with their pencils or whatever, they could do something. A simple patch is the answer, but most of the time you still don't have problems with it. The problem is long-term wear. And the other one, in the southeast particularly, because of the efficiencies of the dome, it gets a lot more condensation on the roof, and over time you'll get some dirt and some streaking. And so you'll want to look at a coating that, like the ceramic tiles or a silicone or something that combats that on its own.
What about rocks? River rocks and stuff around?
Be a great way to do it. In fact, I have a picture of it. Maybe I can show it. We're out of time. I hope we've covered most of your questions. I'll answer the rest of your questions throughout the day. Just come up and find me. I'll answer them. But